what's good about the rule is it provides common critical tracking events, common key data elements, some expectations around producing an electronic sortable spreadsheet.
That actually the documentation had come in incorrectly, and they knew that that was the case, and they could see that it was off by a single number.
Now I have the stuff, it's digital, but I have 6 different platforms. I have 10 different customer portals I got to go log in and type the same stuff into. So, man, this is a big waste of time.
Welcome back to Supply Chain Symphony. This is part 2 of a 4-part series on the global food supply chain. If you haven't listened to the first episode, go do that now, then come back to this one. This is Supply Chain Symphony, where we untangle the complex global networks that bring the products and services we love to life. Join me, Drew Zabrocki, as we explore the technology, leadership, policy, and innovation shaping the systems we all rely on, even when we don't see them working behind the scenes. In our first episode, we followed a tomato's journey through the supply chain, discovering where information flows break down. Today, we dive deeper into what might be the most critical missing ingredient in the entire food supply system. Data. Picture this. In an age of smartphones and quantum computing, much of our food system still runs on paper. That disconnect isn't just a technological curiosity. It's directly linked to inefficiency, waste, and missed opportunities throughout the supply chain. Data may not be the most glamorous aspect of the food industry, but it becomes the essential ingredient that can transform everything from field to fork. Accurate, accessible information is what allows farmers to optimize planting, distributors to route products efficiently, retailers to stock shelves appropriately, and consumers to make informed decisions. Yet, as we'll explore today, data in the food supply chain is often incomplete, inconsistent, inaccessible, or simply absent altogether. Let's dive into the challenges and opportunities of what I call the invisible ingredient, the data that can transform how our food moves from production to consumption. The paper puzzle. If you've ever cooked without following a recipe, you know that the results can be unpredictable. Same principle applies to the food supply chain. Without good data, the results are inconsistent at best, disastrous at worst. At our industry summit, participants engaged in a simulation called the Tomato Experience, and the friction points became immediately apparent, as Eric, who played the role of a store manager, explained.
So for us, it was extremely challenging to get things in through handwriting, and some things weren't even documented correctly. I think our purchase orders, we didn't even have the purchase order number match the purchase order number from the driver. And the driver had left, and so we had to call the driver back to make sure that we had received everything correctly.
This isn't just an isolated example or simulation artifact. Even as the industry transitions from paper to digital systems, miscommunication persists in unexpected ways. The terminology itself becomes a barrier. Michael Darden of DFM Data Corp and member of the ASTM F49 Executive Council provides a perfect example of this terminology challenge.
Container availability is one of the guides that we're putting together inside of ASTM. And the word container availability, depending on who you speak to, means completely different things. If I'm loading a truck or needing a truck or a container to get loaded, I'm looking for the availability of that container to be able to be loaded. But the truck driver that's going to get that empty container has to go to the port to be able to go pick up an available container. Same word, but it means a completely different thing.
Michael's example highlights something crucial. Even when data exists, inconsistent definitions and terminology create confusion. The same words mean different things to different parts of the supply chain, making it nearly impossible to create seamless information flow. This problem multiplies across hundreds of terms and data points. Date formats vary by region. Is 10/11 October 11th or November 10th? Units of measurement change across borders. Product codes differ between systems, Even basic concepts like delivery date might mean shipping date to one party or an arrival date to another. Andy Kennedy of New Era Partners, who helped also to craft the FDA's Food Safety Modernization Act, explained why standardization is so important.
What's good about the rule is it provides common critical tracking events, common key data elements, some expectations around producing an electronic sortable spreadsheet. So it's basically created an even playing field for solution providers in the space to create technology to help you achieve this mission, which, you know, lowers the cost of entry to get into traceability, so which lowers the cost of solutions. So ultimately, government collective action creates a more cost-effective traceability network for everybody and facilitates interoperability.
This standardization creates a common language for data across the supply chain. But even with standards in place, we face significant hurdles in implementing. Andy continues to discuss the importance of making things work properly.
So if you look at some of the research done around UPC barcodes, those things fail about once every 400,000 scans. A data matrix, the quality of those things, is 1 in 10 million, right? PTI label, it's 4 out of 10 right now, is not working. So we got some ways to go, folks. But if you think about a distribution center, one failure in 400,000 cases, you know, decent-sized distribution center, that's about every 10 days, okay, you have a failure, right? 1 in 10 million, it's like once a year, I think.
Regulatory frameworks and standards are providing good paths forward, and we're making progress, but we still have work to do. For everyone to leverage the benefits of technology, the technology must cooperate. It needs to work together, reliably. The interoperability challenge. Beyond paper and standardization issues lies an even more fundamental challenge: interoperability. The ability of different information systems to connect and exchange data meaningfully. Aaron Alt, both a farmer and technology expert from Purdue University, described this challenge.
But now I have the stuff, it's digital, but I have 6 different platforms. I have 10 different customer portals I gotta go log in and type the same stuff into. So man, this is a big waste of time and it's annoying and stuff's always out of sync.
Aaron articulates something that I've heard from countless supply chain experts. Even when data is digitized, it often exists in silos that don't communicate with each other. The same information must be manually entered multiple times into different systems, creating inefficiency and introducing errors. Simply put, interoperability means working together. And when the data doesn't work together, we see a progression of challenges that Aaron outlines.
But working in this space, I've noticed that most places are in varying stages of 3 things. The first stage is just digitization, right? Everything was on paper or it's in people's heads, and we're just happy when we finally have a spreadsheet at all and we can sum things up and make charts. And once you get in the spreadsheet, the second level is interoperability, right? That now I have the stuff, it's digital, but I have 6 different platforms. I have 10 different customer portals I gotta go log in and type the same stuff into. So man, this is a big waste of time and it's annoying and stuff's always out of sync. So interoperability rears its ugly head. After you get past digitization, all of a sudden now I need to reuse it. It was hard enough to get it in the first time. Now I gotta put it in 20 places.
The progression highlights how solving one data challenge often reveals the next. Once information is digital, the interoperability problem becomes apparent. And then, as Aaron went on to explain, once interoperability is addressed, well, data sovereignty concerns emerge.
And as soon as you hit that point, I would guess most people don't feel like we're quite there yet. I mean, I hear interoperability is an issue. Unfortunately, as soon as you hit that point and all the data is flowing around automatically and doing all the things you want it to do, sovereignty rears its ugly head. That you now have to question, wait, all that stuff that's flowing around that have my name and address like on the label or whatever, that now the guy at the store who's unhappy with how I raised that product is showing up at my doorstep as a grower, or there's this long chain of information that now the retailer on the end is using to cut out some of the middlemen so that they can jump back and use, you know, take away their secret sauce, because that all got shared throughout the supply chain. And so as soon as you start getting to where data movement is not a big issue, if you didn't tackle the sovereignty problem up front as to, hey, how can we answer the questions we need down the chain without me having to send you all the data that you may want someday? If you don't solve that, then you're all of a sudden going to just be stuck where you can't do a whole lot about it because everything's already automated and moving and you're just behind the eight ball.
This layered progression of challenges, from digitization to interoperability to sovereignty, it illustrates why data integration in the food supply chain is so complex. Each stage builds on the previous one, and many organizations are at different points in the journey. The complexity is compounded because supply chains are inherently multi-enterprise. No single company controls the entire process from field to fork, as Michael Darden observed.
There is some planning activities that we talk about mostly in this section over here and into that first board, of knowing who the vendors are that you're dealing with and knowing what the terms are that the agreements are being executed between the parties. And that transparency and clarity of business relationship is what's not being done in the planning side as efficiently as it should be. And I think the execution side oftentimes has a lot of variability in it because of the fact that we weren't as precise in the planning side of what we needed to be able to have done.
Michael points to something crucial here. The lack of clear data exchange agreements between trading partners creates downstream execution problems. Without explicit understanding of what information will be shared, when, and in what format, the entire process becomes unpredictable. This degradation of data quality and completeness as information moves through the supply chain creates a cumulative effect. Each handoff introduces potential errors or gaps, resulting in increasingly unreliable information the further you get from the source. Who benefits? The incentive misalignment. Even if we solved all the technical challenges of digitization and interoperability, we'd still face a fundamental problem: misaligned incentives around data sharing. At our industry summit, this question was posed directly.
We always look at somebody else as the person who needs to share the data, except Aaron, we always target you. But in general, we're always like, it's somebody else, and like, what would incentivize that other person to share their data? But I'm going to bring it back around so that each of us can answer a question of, what would it take for you to share your data? Is it in-kind data from another specialized part of the supply chain? Is it access to a greater data pool? Or is it just straight up money?
This gets to the heart of the matter. Everyone wants others to share data, but few are eager to share their own. And the reasons aren't mysterious, as Aaron Alt explains from a farmer's perspective.
The question was all cost and no benefit. So almost asking that question of like, how do you feel about sharing data is almost worthless, because it's sort of like, sharing it for what? If I'm going to share it with you to get something, to get that incentive, that's the question we really have to ask. And, you know, for me, monetary incentives, the problem I have with them is usually they're so low. I add up the total for the year, can't hire somebody to do that. You know, like it's marginal. And so the best ones are the ones that improve my own efficiency.
Aaron articulates the fundamental imbalance. For many supply chain participants, especially at the production end, sharing data involves real cost, time, technology, expertise, without proportional benefits. The party requesting the data often reaps most of the value. This imbalance is particularly pronounced for smaller supply chain participants who may lack the resources for sophisticated data collection and management. As one small producer grower noted,
every retailer wants something different. Different formats, different platforms, all at different times. And I need a full-time data person just to keep up with all the requirements. I just can't afford it. So we end up with these these manual processes and workarounds, and it just isn't ideal for anyone.
However, some organizations are finding a way to create mutual benefit through data sharing. Chuck Tillman from Walmart describes their approach.
I mean, generally speaking, we're working today with several suppliers who are sharing their quality data with us to help us know how to prioritize whether we need to inspect it downstream in our distribution centers. And it's really helping us to be more efficient. And so, you know, I'll go back to the criteria being, does it help the customer save money and live better? If it helps the company to save money and live better, then I'm going to want to share whatever data I can upstream to make that vision happen.
Chuck's approach focuses on mutual benefit, finding ways data exchange can create value for everyone involved. When suppliers share quality data, Walmart can prioritize inspections more efficiently. That reduces handling time for high-quality products. It also reduces labor cost. It extends shelf life, reduces waste, and benefits both supplier and retailer. Lainey Moles from Driscoll shared a similar philosophy.
So for our transportation carriers, we let them see our pulp temperatures, our warehouse temperatures. We share the in-transit temperatures that we see. We'll even share them reject rates at receivers, all in an effort to help see how their portion of the supply chain impacted that receiving quality, which again, ultimately goes back to how we're managing that consumer experience. And at the end of the day, there really is, as long as it's a partner, we're in a mutual agreement and we are working together towards that consumer delight focus.
Driscoll's approach is particularly notable because they're sharing information like rejection rates that could be used against them. But they've recognized the value of working together in collaboration to improve the total system far outweighs the risks of transparency. Now, these examples point to an emerging understanding that data's value multiplies when it's shared appropriately across organizational boundaries. But the challenge lies in creating a framework that ensures that this value is distributed fairly to all participants. When bad data happens to good products. Poor data quality and availability don't just create administrative headaches. They have real, tangible impacts on the food that moves through the supply chain. In the simulation during our event, one monitor observed a telling incident.
One of the things I saw was obviously there was a pressure to move the produce across the room. And I think that pressure is real in the actual industry itself, obviously. But what happened was, is I saw that actually the documentation had come in incorrectly, and they knew that that was the case, and they could see that it was off by a single number. So they went ahead and just drew it in there because the pressure to move it across.
This single incorrect digit might seem minor, but as the monitor pointed out, it has significant consequences.
So my comment is that that's disastrous along the rest of the chain, and the digitization, as you were speaking, would it make it any better? I think it makes it worse, because when you digitize something, there's this natural instinct to believe it because it came from a computer, or that, you know, I'm not smart enough to have figured it out.
This highlights a critical risk. Digitization without accuracy can actually amplify problems by lending false authority to incorrect information. Liz Sertle, a standards expert with GS1, elaborated.
And I can talk about data quality all day and nobody wants me to, but when we start talking, especially when we start talking about FSMA, knowing what information's within your four walls that it's accurate. Now, granted, that's transactional, so that's going to be changing. But what information was in your four walls, and do you trust the information that you're getting up the supply chain? And then can your trading partners trust what you're sending to?
Liz points to the compounding nature of data quality issues. Each participant in the chain depends on the accuracy of information they receive, and in turn, others depend on the accuracy of what they provide. One error early in the process can then cascade through the entire system. These cascading effects have real consequences for physical products. When data is wrong or missing, perfectly good food may be rejected, rerouted, or simply wasted. Martha King speaks specifically about these potential impacts when data is corrupted or missing in the process.
What we're seeing is a critical disconnect between physical reality and data reality. A perfect example is temperature monitoring in transit. When the data is missing or corrupt, even if the product is in perfect condition, the receiving protocols often mandate rejection. This isn't just inefficient. It contributes directly to food waste and higher costs for everyone in the system.
The converse is equally problematic. When data systems fail to flag actual quality issues, substandard product may reach consumers, creating health risks and damaging brand reputation. In a global survey of food industry executives, a majority reported experiencing significant business impacts from data quality issues in the past year, including rejected shipments, customer complaints, compliance violations, and unnecessary waste. The stakes are particularly high for food safety and traceability. When foodborne illnesses outbreaks occur, the ability to quickly trace products through the supply chain can literally be life-saving. Yet many organizations still struggle to provide this basic capability. So where does that leave us? We have paper-heavy processes, siloed systems, mismatched incentives, and human limitations. But here's the good news. Smart people across the industry are solving these problems. Beyond digitization, towards data intelligence. So far, we focus primarily on the challenges, but innovative solutions are emerging that promise to transform how data flows through the supply chain. One of the most promising concepts is what Aaron Alt calls smart data escrow.
And so if the problem is that we have to send data to somebody else and we don't know what they're going to do with it, well, why don't we flip the model? And instead of sending my data to somebody else who just wants to get a check mark out of it, why don't we send the code that produces the check mark to the data? So your data can stay in your own platform where you have control over it and you know what it's for. And the other guy can get his check mark and know that the check mark I got was actually from the code that I thought was running. Can we just share the answers instead of sharing the data?
This approach fundamentally reimagines data sharing. Instead of centralizing information in shared repositories, which raises sovereignty, privacy, and competitive concerns, it allows data to remain under original owner control while still enabling partners to extract needed insights. The concept connects to a broader shift in thinking articulated by Michael Darden.
So I was just going to bring up one point on the word interoperability. And when I first started looking at interoperability, I thought it was the thing that we really wanted to be able to get to. But then I ran into that provenance issue, right? Of you're seeing my data and now you have my data in your database and you're saying it's your data and it's not your data. The word that came to me was actually shared to me by a guy that was completely out of our industry. And he said, what we need is interconnectivity.
Michael's distinction between interoperability and interconnectivity represents a crucial evolution in thinking. Interoperability suggests that systems can exchange and use data, which often means sending your information to someone else's system. Interconnectivity implies that systems can communicate while maintaining their independence and data sovereignty. This interconnectivity approach is taking shape through cool technologies like secure compute, distributed ledger, federated learning, zero-knowledge proofs, all of which enable verifications and insights without requiring raw data exposure. Beyond these privacy-preserving approaches, artificial intelligence and machine learning are creating new possibilities for extracting value from supply chain data. Predictive models can anticipate quality issues, optimize routing based on real-time conditions, and help balance supply and demand more effectively. Michael Law shares real-world experience of incorporating data and intelligence to improve outcomes.
The transportation component of shelf life is critically important, but often overlooked. Time in transit obviously matters, but so does vibration, handling events, temperature fluctuations, and even proximity to ethylene-producing items. When we've worked with customers to integrate these transportation data points into their shelf life models, they've seen significant waste reduction and more consistent quality upon arrival.
The potential value is incredible if we can scale it. And to scale, we need standards. We're moving beyond just product identification standards to more sophisticated frameworks for data exchange across the entire chain. And this includes not just what data to share, but when, how, with whom, and under what governance rules. The goal is to create a common language for supply chain collaboration that respects each participant's legitimate interests. With these standards and frameworks, like those from GS1, ASTM, ISO, and UNCFACT, the innovations that Mike Laws talks about are not only possible, they're possible at scale across the entire global supply chain. Standards and frameworks help to address the challenges that we discussed earlier by creating clearer understandings of data quality and the rules of engagement for all supply chain participants. The human factor. With all of our focus on technology and systems, it's easy to forget a crucial element of the data equation. People. Humans remain essential to food supply chains, collecting data, making decisions based on it, and implementing the resulting actions. As one participant observed, experience and understanding remain irreplaceable.
If you see what's happening, the trend in our industry is that data is important. Data is critical. You have to have data to measure and do whatever, you know, to make the critical decisions. But you also have to know what drives that data. And I think that's the part that we're losing. Because as experience goes away, you see a trend in our industry that if you have a guy that's been doing something very good for 20 or 30 years and done a really good job and he leaves, the company a lot of times will hire 3 data scientists to cover that position. Now you've lost all that experience and now you don't know what drives the data.
This insight highlights a significant risk in our rush towards digitization, the potential loss of tactic knowledge that helps to interpret data meaningfully. Technical systems can capture explicit information, but the contextual understanding that comes from experience is harder to replicate. Industry veteran Mike Laws of Laws Logistics emphasized this human dimension.
You brought it up earlier, the value of people inside this organization. It's in this side of our industry. We can't just rely on the data, we have to rely on the people. And that's hugely important. We have to make our young people want to come work in this industry. We have to make it a destination, a career, not just a job.
Mike's point about attracting talent is particularly relevant to our data discussion. The food industry increasingly competes with tech companies and other sectors for data scientists, analysts, and technology specialists. Creating appealing career paths for these professionals is essential to building the data capabilities that the industry needs. Another human factor is data literacy. Ensuring that people throughout the supply chain can effectively work with the information available to them. As systems become more sophisticated, the skills needed to use them effectively, they also evolve. Rob Trice of the Mixing Bowl Hub and Better Food Ventures underscores the need to level up our digital skills across the board.
The digital skills gap in the supply chain is enormous. It's not just about hiring data scientists. So that's certainly part of it. It's about building baseline data literacy throughout the organization. Everyone from the warehouse floor to the C-suite needs to understand how to interpret and act on the data relevant to their role. Without that foundation, even the most sophisticated analytics teams won't deliver their potential value.
This focus on human capabilities recognizes that technology alone cannot solve the data challenges. People and systems must evolve together, with each enabling the other to perform more effectively. So in conclusion, as we've explored today, data truly is the missing ingredient in many food supply chains. Despite tremendous technological advancement in other aspects of the industry, information flow remains fragmented, inconsistent, and often manual. The challenges are multifaceted. Technical hurdles around digitization and interoperability, incentive misalignments between supply chain participants, quality and accuracy issues, and human factors including skills and knowledge transfer. Yet promising solutions are emerging that address these challenges in novel ways, from smart data escrow that enables insights without compromising sovereignty, to AI systems that extract more value from available information, to standard frameworks that create common languages for collaboration. Most importantly, we are seeing a mindset shift around data, from viewing it as a proprietary asset to be protected, to seeing it as a shared resource that creates more value when it flows appropriately across organizational boundaries. And as I said during the summit,
you're not going to make money by jailing your customers' data and siloing them. You're going to make money by adding value in the supply chain. And if you have extractive business models, we probably won't see you here in 5 years.
This perspective, focusing on value creation rather than data hoarding, points the way towards a more collaborative, efficient, and transparent supply chain. The path forward isn't simple. It requires investment in technology, standards adoption, new collaborative frameworks, and human capabilities. But the potential rewards are enormous. More efficient operations, less waste, higher quality products, better consumer experiences, and ultimately, a more sustainable food system. Join us next time on Supply Chain Symphony, when we'll explore trust issues in a competitive food system, examining how organizations can collaborate effectively while preserving their distinct interests and advantages. I'm Drew Zabrocki. Thanks for listening. You can learn more about supply chain innovation and smart data escrow on our resource library at supplychainsymphony.com. There's a link in our episode description that includes additional case studies that we didn't have time to cover today. This episode was produced by me, Drew Zabrocki. We had editing from Martha King, who knows the difference between data, information, and knowledge and wisdom, and yet still loses her phone 3 times a day. Mixing and sound design from James at Next Day. Fact checking from Sarah Jane. And Rob Trice was last seen trying to explain to his smart fridge that just because he bought kale doesn't mean he actually plans to eat it this week. And as always, thank you, Totem Innovation, for bringing this project to life. And if you have thoughts or ideas about the show or your own supply chain horror stories, send us an email. We'd love to hear from you. Reach us at connect@supplychainsymphony.com. And you can also leave us a review or a rating wherever you listen. It really helps and we appreciate it. Supply Chain Symphony is a part of the Totem Innovation Network, and we'll be back next week with our exploration of trust issues in competitive food systems. Until then, remember, data isn't everything, but everything depends on it.